God would have no problems working through the wards. She sagged against the wall, trying to catch her breath. Her thoughts and impressions were hopelessly jumbled. Karen appeared, popping out of a side door.
What happened?
Get some soup, Sienna ordered. She carried Frida into the living room and placed her on the couch.
No.
Emily followed her into the room and sat on the chair, suddenly feeling exhausted. Her entire body felt drained. Alarmed, she tested her power reserves as Karen returned, and discovered they were untouched. Resisting the entity's sheer presence had been enough to exhaust her. She rubbed her forehead, feeling yet another headache blooming to life. The entity hadn't been focused on her, and yet it had had an effect.
"Caleb, test the wards," Sienna snapped. "And then send Marion and Croce down here."
"Yes, mother," Caleb said.
Karen reappeared, carrying a bowl of thin soup. Sienna took it and started to feed Frida, holding the spoon to her lips as if she were feeding a baby. Emily watched as Frida sipped, wishing she could reach out and hold the younger girl. The berserker spell had been stopped before it had drained Frida completely, but it had still left her tired and worn. And yet, without it, they might not have reached home.
"Tired," Frida said.
"Lie still," Sienna ordered. "You'll need to eat something more solid once you regain your strength." Frida looked at Emily, then relaxed.
What was it?
"I wish I knew," Emily said. She could see a dozen ways to cast an illusion that would look like a god, particularly one designed to allow its target's perceptions to fill in the gaps. But the entity had clearly been far more substantial, and it had wielded magic. She had no doubt that Jaleel and the others were dead. What could do that? "But it can't get to us in here."
"Yet."
Sienna's voice was grim. "The wards are strong, but not unbreakable." Marion came into the room, looking mutinous.
"Mother! Karen!"
Her voice trailed off as she saw Frida.
"What happened?"
"Good question," Sienna said. "There was something at the square."
Caleb returned, followed by Croce.
"The wards are fine, mother," Caleb said. "But there's an odd resonance that worries me. Someone might be probing the edge of our defenses."
"I'll take a look at it."
Sienna helped Frida sit upright, then passed her a piece of bread and butter.
"Emily, make sure Frida keeps eating. She's going to need to eat until she feels stuffed."
"I'm all right,"
Frida said.
"I eat," Sienna said firmly. "I've seen that spell kill people who didn't have someone looking after them already."
Marion cleared her throat.
"Mother,"
she said, sounding scared.
"What happened?"
"We saw an entity that claimed to be a god," Sienna said.
She rose, allowing Emily to sit next to Frida.
"Caleb can fill you in. I have to check the wards."
Karen's voice rose.
"Where's father?"
"I wish I knew," Sienna said.
"But you can find him," Marion said. "Can't you?"
"I don't have a tracking spell on him," Sienna said sharply. "I don't know what happened to him."
She walked out of the room, closing the door firmly behind her. Marion looked at Caleb.
"What happened?"
Emily forced herself to concentrate on Frida as Caleb told the story. Frida was growing stronger, thankfully, but she still looked weak. She would have to get some rest soon, Emily knew, yet she had to eat first. The berserker spell would have drained her reserves to the limit. If she went to sleep without eating something, she might never wake up.
"Justice,"
Marion breathed when Caleb finished.
"It's him."
"And father is still out there somewhere," Caleb said. "Where is he?"
Emily swallowed. General Pollock was tough, but he couldn't have any active defenses against outside influences. Given time, Emily knew, she could have twisted his mind into a pretzel. She had no doubt that Justice, whatever the entity actually was, could do the same. Hell, merely being in its presence for a few hours would probably be enough to wear down the strongest defenses. And then... "The general has a blood tie to his family," she thought. "The entity could find us."
"You're the man of the house," Karen said. "Go find him." "Casper would have gone by now," Marion added.
Caleb looked hesitant, glancing between Emily and his sisters. Emily understood all too well. Caleb loved his father, wanted to save his father, but the streets were in chaos and the wards might not remain secure. Who knew what had happened to General Pollock? Finding him might prove impossible.
Or all too easy, her thoughts mocked her. But we might not like what we found.
Dad is strong, Caleb said. He could have escaped another way.
Emily winced. General Pollock had been far too close to Janus for her peace of mind. She had no way to know if Janus had magic, but the priest could have used a wand or simply knocked General Pollock on the head if he'd wanted a prisoner, or stuck a knife in his back when the entity first appeared. God knew everyone had been so focused on justice that Janus could have done anything without anyone taking a moment's notice.
You have a blood tie, Karen said again. You could find him.
I'll go, Marion said.
I've got a blood tie, too.
Karen glared at her.
Do I have to stick your butt to the chair again?
You're too young, Caleb said. You have to stay here.
I'm not a child, Marion snapped.
Emily felt a stab of sympathy for Marion, even though she was being a brat. The youngest member of the family had to feel as though she had a lot to live up to. And yet, Caleb was right. Marion was too young to go out on the streets alone, particularly now. She might be caught and killed by a mob before she managed to escape.
Yes, you are, Caleb said. Marion!
You need to decide what to do,
Frida said weakly. Emily glanced at her in surprise. Frida sounded scornful.
I don't know what to do, Caleb snapped.
Casper would have known what to do, Marion said.
Shit, Emily thought. Caleb would not take that calmly. Casper is dead.
Caleb's face reddened.
I don't even know what we are dealing with.
And you don't have time to work it out, Frida said.
She shot Caleb a nasty look.
You always hesitate. You don't have the nerve to...
Enough, Emily said quietly. She knew Frida was tired and stressed. They were all tired and stressed. But that didn't excuse her picking on Caleb. Frida, behave.
He does hesitate, Frida insisted. Emily...
Shut up! Caleb thundered.
The door opened.
I think you should both be quiet, Sienna said, stepping back into the room. Karen, fetch us all some kava, and some more stew and bread for Frida.
I don't need it,
Frida protested.
Yes, you do, Sienna said.
She looked at Caleb. I couldn't locate the source of the resonance. That alone is worrying. Emily nodded slowly. If someone had been attempting to break down the wards, or study them in hopes of finding a weak spot, there should have been a clear link between them and the wards. Sienna should have been able to locate the would-be burglar and fry him. But if the resonance couldn't be found, were the wards reacting to the entity's aura, or were they being probed from a distance? Which should be impossible, she thought, but so is a god walking the world. She glanced up as she heard the front door rattle, readying a spell. Sienna and Caleb did the same, while Croce and Karen took up positions behind them. If someone broke through, somehow bypassing all the defenses, it would be the last thing he did. And then the door opened, revealing General Pollock. Emily couldn't help a surge of relief. He looked to have aged 20 years in the last couple of hours, but he was alive.
Dad, Caleb said. Stay there.
Sienna's voice was so cold, it froze Caleb in his tracks.
Watch and wait.
General Pollock stopped, holding his hands in the air to prove they were empty. Sienna stalked towards him, the wards gathering around her. Emily sensed them probing General Pollock, confirming he was alive, unharmed, and definitely not under outside control. Sienna relaxed, then kissed her husband with a passion that made Emily look away. It was suddenly easy to believe their marriage had been a love match.
I'm glad to see you alive.
Sienna relaxed slightly as she led her husband back into the living room.
What happened? That thing was killing people,
General Pollock said. He sounded as tired as Emily felt.
Most of the council, a dozen guardsmen... It recited their crimes and then turned them to stone. I had to stab myself with my knife just to break free and run.
Sienna laughed.
I always knew you'd make it.
Thank you, General Pollock said. Emily felt a flicker of wistful envy as Karen hugged her father tightly. It would have been nice to have a father she knew, a father she actually loved. someone who had been there for her from the moment of her birth. She shook her head, telling herself that there was no way to change history. If she'd had a loving family, she might never have left Earth at all. But my life would have been better there, she told herself. And then, who knows?
We have a major problem, General Pollock said. That thing is dangerously powerful.
He's a god, Marion insisted. Her eyes were fever bright. He is!
It can't be, Emily said.
If it was a real god, none of us would have escaped. She sighed, wishing she felt better. It's a trick of some kind. We have to figure out how it's done.
Justice only has the power over those who deserve punishment, Marion said. Father doesn't deserve punishment.
Emily looked back at her.
Did Antony?
You don't know what he might have done in the dark, Marion pointed out.
He could have committed all sorts of crimes that were never revealed.
And if that were true, Sienna said, how many others also deserve punishment and didn't get it?
Emily thought as fast as she could. If justice was all-powerful, they were doomed. That was beyond dispute. Resistance would be utterly futile. She could remember a couple of books and comics where all-powerful characters had been beaten, but most of them had only worked because the omnipotent enemy hadn't had brains to match his power. The real world was rarely so helpful. And yet, she'd never studied any of the local religions, but she'd always had the impression they talked about immensely powerful entities rather than all-powerful beings. They were very much like the Norse gods, if she recalled correctly. Thor and Loki were powerful, she knew, yet they could be beaten by mere humans. But then they were really nothing more than supercharged humans. The Norse and the Greeks, Romans, and Celts hadn't conceived of a single being who lived on a whole different scale, whose existence comprised the universe. The concept of God had come later. The Norse gods weren't all-seeing, she thought, and that meant that they could be beaten. She wished, suddenly, that she'd spent more time reading about the myths. How much of what she knew came from the original legends, instead of the comics and movies? The movie versions of Odin, Thor, and Loki might bear little resemblance to the older versions.
He is a god, Marion said. His motives might be beyond us.
He slaughtered the council, General Pollock said. I don't know if any of them survived.
You might be the last, Sienna said quietly.
I was never on the council, General Pollock reminded her. My appointment didn't come with a council seat.
They deserved it, Marion said. How many lives were blighted because the guildmasters ran the city to suit themselves?
The guildmasters weren't perfect, General Pollock said, but there were worse criminals in the city.
This looks very much like a coup, Sienna added. Use justice to slaughter the former government and cow resistance while the new government is imposed.
He's a god. Marion's eyes shone with tears. And all of the stories agree that one day he will return.
They say that about all the gods, Sienna said. Have you ever seen a god?
You have, Marion insisted.
Mother, it's a trick, Emily said quietly.
Marion rounded on her.
It's no trick, she thundered. Everyone knew he was coming back to judge the sinners. Everyone heard the stories. They just didn't want to believe it.
It has to be a trick, Emily said. A real god would have overwhelmed all of us. A real god would be convincing. We would know him the moment we laid eyes on him.
She took a breath. Our wards and protections kept us from being overwhelmed. We could feel his presence right until the moment we stepped into the house. What sort of god is kept out by simple wards?
Everything he's done so far could have been done by magic, Sienna added, and his targets were more than just random sinners.
Marion glared at her mother. You want to believe that.
She swung around to face Emily.
You want to believe that, too.
I do believe it, Emily said. I've met powerful creatures, seen powerful spells. There's no reason to assume that this entity is any different.
Emily's right, Caleb said.
He looked contemplative, as if his mind was occupied by some greater thought.
Given time, I could cast a series of spells that would have the same effect.
But probably not on such a scale, Emily thought. The power requirements would be astronomical. She mulled it over and over in her mind, wishing she had a moment to sit down and work out the spells. Compelling people to drop to their knees and surrender their free will would require a focused spell. Doing it for a single person would be relatively straightforward, but doing it for hundreds, perhaps thousands, of people at once would be difficult. The entity was extremely powerful, whatever else it was, and it had done a great deal more than merely overwhelm the weaker mind. Or the mind's more inclined to believe it is a god, her thoughts reminded her. I'm the only person on this world who knows about monotheistic religion.
Of course she's right, Marion snapped. Lady Emily is always right. That's all we ever hear.
She glared at Emily.
He was telling us all about how wonderful you are,
she sneered.
He made you out to be a goddess, someone who could do no wrong, so sweet, so kind, so clever, so beautiful, so wonderful, so adorable, so...
That will do, Sienna said.
Not this time.
Marion jabbed a finger at Emily.
Casper died because of you.
Marion, Sienna snapped.
Be quiet. I will not be silenced.
Marion's voice trembled with rage.
Casper died because of you. Caleb is the heir because of you. You killed Casper to make sure Caleb would become heir.
Her voice grew louder.
And you deny justice because he will come for you.
Emily stared at her in shock. It was hard to think of a response. She hadn't killed Casper. He'd accompanied her to Heart's Eye, knowing the risks. And even then he'd been blindsided by the necromancer's secret weapon. None of them had known what to expect. How could they have? If anyone else had ever stumbled across the street, they'd kept it to themselves. Frida broke the silence.
You little bitch!
She lifted a hand, readying a spell.
I'll...
Enough! Sienna said. The anger in her voice would have stopped any sane man in his tracks. Marion!
Casper is dead!
Tears ran down Marion's cheeks, her entire body shaking with rage.
And she's the only one who benefited!
Emily, take Frida to the bedroom and make sure she gets some rest, Sienna ordered. No magic, not until she's recovered fully. I'll talk to you later. Her voice was calm, but there was an edge to it that made Emily shiver. Everyone was on edge, yet... She looked at Marion and recoiled at the naked hatred in the younger girl's eyes. She believed, truly believed, that Emily had deliberately led Casper to his death, clearing the way for Caleb to inherit. And yet, she forced herself to move, helping Frida to her feet. Marion stepped aside, moving with deliberate slowness even after her mother snapped at her. Raw magic crackled around her, a grim reminder that she would be going to school next year. Emily hoped privately that she didn't go to Whitehall. Thankfully, if she did, she'd be someone else's problem.
That was uncalled for, General Pollock said as Emily helped Frida up the stairs. His voice was grim. You know better.
It had to be said.
Marion's voice echoed upwards. She sounded much like her mother in that moment.
Casper would have lived if he hadn't been with her.
And that, Emily knew, was all too true. Chapter 24
Little bitch,
Frida spluttered as they stumbled into the bedroom. Her voice was tired, so tired that Emily suspected Frida didn't know what she was saying.
I should turn her into a frog. Teach her a lesson. Show her
it's all right, Emily said. She helped Frida to the bed, then undid and removed her shoes before she lay down.
You need to sleep.
It wasn't all right, she knew, as she sat next to Frida. Marion's accusation had hurt badly. Her entire body shook as it sank in. Marion had accused her of practically murdering Casper to clear the way for Caleb to inherit. She couldn't really think that Emily had deliberately gotten Casper killed, could she? And yet Marion hadn't been there. She didn't know the full details. No one did. Marion's words echoed in her head. And you deny justice because he will come for you. She looked down at the wooden floorboards, then rested her head in her hands. The seeds of doubt had been sown. Whatever happened, Caleb and the rest of his family would wonder if Emily had been instrumental in Casper's death, if she'd calculated that marrying Caleb would bring her even more wealth and power. Why not? Fulvia had married into a magical family and turned it into her personal power base. Why couldn't Emily do the same?
I didn't kill him,
she thought, feeling tears forming in her eyes.
I didn't mean to get him killed.
She blinked the tears away angrily. It had been a long day, and she looked out the window, noting that the sun hadn't even begun to sink towards the horizon. God alone knew what was going on out there beyond the wards. Sienna had called it a coup, and Emily suspected she was right. Janus had used justice to clear the way for his takeover, and that meant... It has to be some kind of trick, she told herself. But what? She looked down at Frida, sleeping peacefully. Her friend had risked her life to save them, yet she'd also snapped and snarled at Caleb. Emily knew she'd have to tell Frida to apologize when she woke up. They were all on edge, Frida and Marion included, but that didn't excuse any of them. Justice might not have managed to worm his way into their minds, as far as she could tell, yet he'd definitely left his mark. There was a faint tap on the door. Emily hesitated. It could be Marion. And then Rose, opening the door and peering out. Caleb stood there, holding a broom in one hand and a mug of kava in the other. It took Emily a second to realize he'd actually used the broom handle to knock on the door, just in case Sienna had booby-trapped it. There were so many wards protecting the house that it would be hard for anyone to pick out a specific spell.
Emily, Caleb said.
He looked relieved.
Is she awake?
She's sleeping, Emily said. She could hear the faint sounds of an argument echoing up the stairs. Caleb,
Mother wants me to sit on the roof, Caleb said. Do you want to sit with me?
Emily hesitated. She wanted to be with him. She wanted reassurance. And yet she knew they'd both be in deep trouble if Sienna caught them. Caleb's mother had too many problems already. The sounds from downstairs were growing louder. Marion didn't seem to know when to stop. Yeah, she said. Just let me get my cloak. She couldn't help feeling cold as she followed Caleb up a wooden ladder and out onto the roof. The wards floated through the air, roughly a meter above their heads. She sensed smaller spells snapping and snarling at any trace of rogue magic, far too close for comfort. She kept her head down as Caleb turned, gazing around the city, then sat on the roof. After a moment, Emily sat next to him. Beneficence was burning. Smoke and flames rose from a dozen separate places, all to the north. She could taste smoke on the air. It was hard to tell what was burning, yet all the fires were clearly concentrated in the same general area. And yet it was terrifyingly quiet. She couldn't hear anything louder than her own breathing. Caleb wrapped an arm around her shoulders.
I'm sorry about Marion.
Don't worry about it, Emily said. She'd never had an older brother. She had no idea what it was like to have someone like that in her life. And yet, if she'd blamed someone for killing Caleb or Jade, she wouldn't have hesitated to let them know either. She's young.
That's not an excuse, Caleb said.
He sounded pained.
She should never have said that to you.
Thanks, Emily said. His arm tightened just for a second.
I spent half my life trying to get out of Casper's shadow. And now I find myself reprimanded for not being him.
And Casper spent his life trying to get out of his father's shadow, Emily thought, remembering Casper's drunken confession. And you don't have to be him, Emily said. You're nothing like him.
6 months ago, I would have said that was a good thing.
Caleb looked down at the rooftop as a gust of cold wind brushed against them.
Now, I never realized just how much Casper had to learn. When everyone thought he would inherit. All the little things I have to remember, all the obligations that come with being part of House Waterfall.
Emily hugged him awkwardly. Caleb had never been particularly interested in power for its own sake. He was a born scientist, a researcher into magic. She smiled in sudden warmth as she remembered their ever-evolving joint project. Caleb would have been happy to build their university and then vanish into it. Now, he had responsibilities that came with his family. He couldn't walk away from them. And yet, she was tempted to tell him to do just that, She had money and a house, enough to support both of them for the rest of their lives. They could move to Heart's Eye and build their university in peace, then open it to other seekers after truth. But she knew he wouldn't be comfortable if she supported him. Lady Barb had warned her more than once that men needed to feel useful. They had to feel as though they were earning their keep. But he wouldn't have any difficulty supporting himself once he graduates, she told herself dryly. He could pay me back then if he wished. She shook her head, telling herself she was being selfish. She couldn't ask Caleb to abandon his family, to walk away from his parents and siblings. She couldn't ask that of him. How could she? She rarely looked back at her mother and stepfather, despite the long, dark shadow they had cast on her life. She would be happy if she never saw either of them again. But Caleb had been raised in a loving environment. He might fight with his family from time to time, yet he loved them. You'll be fine, she said softly. I have faith in you. Thank you, Caleb said. She leaned into his embrace, forcing herself to think. Justice was... what? The entity wasn't a simple illusion, not when she'd felt the presence centered on it. Whatever it was, it could clearly use magic at will. And yet, it definitely wasn't human. A manivore? She'd seen spells strike them and vanish back in the past. Or a mimic. Perhaps someone should have tried to cast a dispelling spell on it, she thought. She kicked herself, mentally. She should have thought of that back in Square. And yet a mimic couldn't go after more than one target at once. She considered it for a long moment. Justice hadn't behaved like a manivore, although she had to admit that she'd only ever seen one type of manivore. There could be others, lost somewhere in the past. And yet, based on what she knew, Justice wasn't a manivore. It had certainly shown no sign of being unable to target mundanes as well as magicians. A mimic was a much more likely answer. But mimics kill and replace their targets, she mused. She was, as far as she knew, the only living person who could build a mimic from scratch, at least in theory. She'd never dared try. Justice killed. She forced her tired mind to work. A mimic could replace someone perfectly, perfectly enough to fool even their closest friends and family. She shivered against Caleb as she remembered Travis, mocking her as she'd waited outside the warden's office. She'd been talking to the mimic, she knew, but there hadn't been anything to give it away. The mimic had duplicated Travis perfectly. Although I didn't know him that well, she mused. Travis had been an asshole, an older student who'd resented her, not without reason. She'd certainly done her best to have as little to do with him as possible. Someone who was close to him might have sensed something wrong. But Justice had spoken in simple terms. He'd sounded as though he was speaking by rote. A supercharged spell, she said. Compulsion, but on a terrifying scale. Caleb looked at her. A necromancer? A necromancer couldn't use compulsion like that, Emily said. Could he? She looked down at her hands. Shade had used blood magic, but that depended on having a sample of the target's blood. Dua Kapala hadn't used any blood magic or compulsion spells as far as she knew. Gaius had cast them for him, back when he'd been undermining Farrakhan's defenses. More complex compulsion spells would be beyond most necromancers, as they relied on fine-tuning to overwhelm resistance. Even Mother Holly, who'd understood a great deal about making use of limited resources, hadn't been able to use such spells after she'd become a full-fledged necromancer. The spell was blunt, Caleb said. It didn't adjust itself to crack through wards and protections. True, Emily agreed. Necromancers do use overpowered spells. And mimics draw their energy from something similar, she added silently. But a mimic would be able to cast spells, wouldn't it? Maybe one of the priests became a necromancer, Caleb said. But before he took the plunge, he swore a set of oaths that kept the madness in check. Risky, Emily said. Perversely, a selfish necromancer had a greater chance of surviving the necromantic rite than someone who wanted to do good. A fanatic might be dedicated enough to turn into a necromancer, but as the madness grew stronger, he'd lose whatever sense of focus he'd managed to retain after the transition. I wouldn't care to take the risk.
They might, Caleb said.
Emily frowned. A compulsion spell, more than one, mingled with an illusion and probably some subtle prompts to keep people from thinking logically. How could something be both infinitively huge and yet small enough to fit into the square? And the petrification spell, strong enough to not only turn someone into stone, but lock them that way permanently. She remembered the statues, screaming in agony, and shuddered. Sienna had been sure the victims were killed outright, but what if she was wrong? What if their souls remained trapped in the statues? But what would happen, she asked herself, if a necromancer tried to use a transfiguration spell? Would it be so powerful that the victim would be trapped permanently, or killed? They must have known about Vesperian, Caleb said. The Hands of Justice must have guessed what was coming. Probably, Emily said. Vesperian's Ponzi scheme had been doomed for months, once the borrowing had gotten out of hand. The notes and the massive financial losses would have weakened the city's government, undermining the people's faith in their leaders. Combined with a real god, or at least something that looked like one, the Hands of Justice might be able to take over without much opposition. And they targeted his investors deliberately, just to speed up the collapse. And then killed him themselves, Caleb said. His hand ran down her back as she leaned against him. And that started the collapse. We need more information, Emily said. A very good idea, Sienna's voice said. And you also need that hand removed. Emily jumped. She hadn't heard Sienna coming up the ladder behind them. Caleb yanked his hand away from her behind and tried to look innocent, even though it was futile. They might not have been making out on the rooftop, but they'd definitely been closer than mere friendship would allow. Besides, their relationship was no secret. Someone who saw them would know the truth. Mother, Caleb said, the wards would keep anyone from getting a good look at us. I believe I told you to behave when you were under my roof. Sienna gave Emily a sharp look. Did your father not teach you that a sorcerer's home is his castle? That you should follow the rules? Emily hesitated, unsure what to say. Her mouth was very dry. Apparently not. Sienna sounded regretful, rather than angry. But she also sounded tired. Caleb, go downstairs to your room, and stay there unless the wards are threatened. Yes, Mother, Caleb said. Emily watched him go, then looked at Sienna. Her face was so composed that Emily knew strong emotions churned behind the mask. She tried to keep her own face composed, even though she knew they were in trouble. Sienna would be within her rights to kick both Emily and Frida out of the house for disobeying the rules, or worse. Your father may not have told you this, Sienna said, but the reputation of a young woman can come back to haunt them. You do not want people discussing your choices behind your back. I already have people talking about me behind my back, Emily said. And you really don't want to give them more ammunition, Sienna snapped. She stepped forward, towering over Emily. Somehow she looked more terrifying than a necromancer. Your reputation overshadows you. You have to be careful. I know, Emily said. Sienna didn't look convinced. What you do in private isn't important. She knelt down, facing Emily. But what you get caught doing in public is important. We're not in public, Emily said. That's the sort of excuse I expect from a 5-year-old, Sienna said. I suggest you be more careful. She sat back and sighed heavily. I must also apologize for my daughter's harsh words. Please rest assured that she will be suitably punished. Emily winced inwardly. Marion was lucky there had been no outside witnesses. Caleb wasn't the only one whose actions reflected on his family. Sienna would have been judged by how well she'd handled the situation. Her community might have turned on her if she'd allowed her daughter to get away with such unpleasant accusations. And the story of the boy who cried feud is all about dealing with it, she thought. Lady Barb had advised her to read the stories, explaining that they would help her to understand magical society. It's better than the boy who cried wolf. She is young, Sienna said. She will grow into maturity. Emily swallowed. You don't have to punish her. I know what it's like to lose someone I loved. I don't blame her for being angry. Sienna met her eyes. Her behavior was appalling, she said, and she tried to leave the house this morning.
I don't blame her, Emily said.
And I am glad of that, Sienna said. She sounded relieved. It dawned on Emily slowly that she could have demanded compensation for the accusations. But I cannot allow Marion to grow up in the belief that lashing out at people is acceptable. The next person she mouths off to may demand a far more exacting price.
Emily shivered. A nobleman insulted by a little boy might draw his sword and behead the child, or break bones, or... She'd seen it happen in Zangaria. A magician might hex the child or demand payment from the child's parents. Sienna was far more able to defend herself and her family than any peasant woman, but even she couldn't stand up to everything. Her community would have shunned her if she'd allowed her children to run wild.
She's young, she said finally.
Yes, Sienna said, and I want her to grow up.
I didn't want Casper to die, Emily said.
Sienna smiled humorlessly.
If I believed you had deliberately set him up to die, Lady Emily, I would have killed you the moment you entered the house, she said. I might have had to let him go off to war, but I could certainly have avenged his death.
Her smile faded, but the necromancer who killed him is dead, and I thank you for it.
You're welcome, Emily said automatically.
Sienna turned to look over the city.
Go back to your room and get some rest, she said gruffly. I'll have some more food sent up for Frida when she awakes.
Emily rose. Thank you, she said. And I'm sorry about her conduct, too.
You can put her to work scrubbing the floor if you wish, Sienna said.
It took Emily a moment to realize that the older woman was joking.
And I suggest you do tell her to apologize.
I will, Emily said.
And don't let me catch you and Caleb too close again, Sienna said, as Emily clambered down the ladder. I'll have to take notice next time.
We'll behave, Emily said.
Forgive me for not believing you. Sienna said dryly. You two are in love.
Chapter 25 Emily slept badly. The wards kept Justice's influence out, she thought, but she still felt something at the edge of her dreams. A presence, perhaps, or just random flickers from the depths of her mind. She drifted in and out of sleep for what felt like hours before a knock at the door awakened her. Frida sat up as Emily dragged herself out of bed and walked over to open the door. Karen stood outside, carrying two mugs of steaming kava.
"Drink this, then get dressed and come downstairs," she said. "We might have to go out soon."
Emily took the mugs, passed one to Frida, and turned back to Karen, but she was already heading down the stairs. Emily shook her head, closed the door, and walked over to the window. It was dark outside, but she saw faint glimmers in the distance. They were on the very edge of dawn.
"I slept poorly," Frida said.
"You owe Caleb an apology," Emily said, without looking back. She looked out the window as she sipped her drink. People were gathering in the darkened street, but the wards made it hard for her to see them clearly.
"You were very unpleasant to him."
"He deserved it,"
Frida said, unrepentantly. Emily sighed. She knew Frida didn't like Caleb much, and she was fairly sure Caleb felt the same way, but there were limits. Insulting Caleb in front of his younger siblings would probably have led to a real fight if Sienna hadn't returned. Lady Barb had warned her against humiliating a man in public, unless she was prepared to deal with the consequences. She turned to face the younger girl.
"Apologize to him, please. He doesn't deserve that sort of treatment."
Frida sniffed.
"Should I prostrate myself, or will getting down on my knees suffice?"
"Just say you're sorry," Emily snapped, as she yanked the curtains closed. She wasn't sure if it was the lack of sleep or the grim awareness that they might be attacked at any moment, but her head was starting to pound again.
"And do try to sound convincing."
"I hope Marion is going to apologize, too," Frida said. "She was very unpleasant to you."
"I'll live," Emily said.
She pulled off her nightgown and reached for her shirt.
"And so will you."
"So will Caleb," Frida said.
Emily finished dressing, then splashed water on her face as Frida climbed out of bed. She looked a little unsteady, although she tried hard to put a brave face on it as she removed her nightshirt.
No one had ever accused Frida of lacking determination, whatever else she lacked. And yet she remained alarmingly short for her age. Her childhood had stunted the rest of her life. At least she's put some meat on her bones, Emily thought. She doesn't look like she's starving now. She met Frida's eyes. How's your magic?
Recovering, Frida said. I should be back to normal tomorrow.
Emily nodded. Her one experience with Berserker had left her feeling tired and drained for far too long. She would have died if Jade hadn't been there. Frida had learned the spell later in life, after entering martial magic in third year. She'd had more reserves to draw on than Emily, but the spell had still drained her. Come on, she said once Frida was dressed. Let's go face the music. There was no sign of Marion when they reached the bottom of the stairs and entered the living room. Caleb and his father stood in one corner, having a quiet discussion that broke off as soon as Emily and Frida appeared. Emily felt her cheeks heat, noting how Caleb couldn't quite meet her eyes. He looked dreadfully embarrassed. No doubt his father had given him a lecture on behaving himself, too.
Caleb?
Frida's voice was clipped.
I apologize for my conduct.
Emily resisted the urge to sigh out loud. Frida didn't sound convincing, even if she hadn't thrown herself to her knees and begged for forgiveness. She certainly didn't want to admit she might have been wrong.
Thank you, Caleb said.
He didn't sound as though he believed her, but he appeared willing to accept the apology at face value. Emily reminded herself, wryly, that he had younger sisters.
I accept your apology.
Sienna entered, followed by Karen.
A messenger visited the street 30 minutes ago, she said. She sounded cross. We are to present ourselves at Crossroads Corner at sunrise, so we can hear a formal announcement or face punishment.
That was all he said, Caleb added. He just made his announcement and vanished.
It could be a trap, Emily pointed out. General Pollock might be the only member of the city's government left alive, even if he hadn't held a seat on the council. The hands of justice would certainly want to arrest him. And then there was Sienna and Emily herself. Turning up for the announcement might be a mistake.
Do they want all of us?
Apparently so, Sienna said. We'll be going under glamours, of course.
General Pollock cleared his throat.
The younger children will be staying here, he said firmly. Karen, Croce, and Marion will not leave the house.
Father,
Karen said, I have to stay home, General Pollock said. I'm not going to take you into a dangerous situation.
Emily forced herself to think as Caleb passed her a cheese sandwich. The hands of justice would know where General Pollock lived. His address was a matter of public record. But arresting him, if he stayed in Sorcerer's Row, would be difficult. The sorcerers would defend their territory, unless, of course, justice came into play. If the entity absorbed spells, she asked herself, what would happen if it brushed against a ward? We might want to reprogram the wards, she thought, as she started to eat the sandwich. It tasted stale. Perhaps we could feed it too much magic. She shook her head, grimly. Justice was too powerful, she suspected, to be overloaded, and if the entity was overloaded, the resulting explosion might destroy the city. Even a necromancer didn't wield so much power. Nothing short of a nexus point did. The combined power of every magician on Sorcerer's Row couldn't hope to match that. Caleb, she said slowly, is there a concealed nexus point within the city? Sienna gave her an odd look.
There were always old legends about catacombs under the castle, she said, but there was never any suggestion of a nexus point. The closest one is several hundred miles away.
Emily and Frida exchanged glances. There had been an entire network of catacombs under Mountaintop, concealing the school's greatest secret. If Aurelius had managed to drain hundreds of students to power the school's wards, why couldn't Janus and his sect do the same with willing volunteers? Given enough time, they might even be able to match a nexus point, until they ran out of victims. But by then, they might have secured their grip on the city, she thought, as she took her cloak and wrapped it around her shoulders. They might not need justice any longer. The presence struck her as soon as they opened the door and stepped out onto the street, an icy pulse of something drawing her towards the square. She gritted her teeth against the compulsion, knowing it would keep wearing away at her defenses until they collapsed. The handful of others on the streets, heading northwards themselves, looked as though they were struggling against an invisible force.
"Put up a glamour, then keep it in place," Sienna ordered. She cast one over her husband as she spoke. "Do not let it slip."
Emily nodded, casting the spell as they reached the end of the street. The wards remained in place, yet the outer edges were starting to fray. Emily couldn't tell if the entity had tried to break them, or if a more conventional sorcerer had, but either way it was a grim warning that Sorcerer's Row couldn't hold out indefinitely. The sheer difficulty of convincing a dozen sorcerers to work together would make any more active defense impossible. She took Caleb's hand, feeling a little odd as she looked up at him. His glamour made him look like a merchant, a man 20 years older than she. She knew it was a glamour. She saw flickers of his real face below the mask, but it still felt as if she were being unfaithful. Perhaps it was just an effect of using a glamour. The spell was more than just an illusion. It convinced anyone looking at it to believe the illusion. Even a person who knew it was a glamour might be fooled. "And it isn't that different to the spell Justice used," she told herself. "It pushes everyone to believe in it." There was no sign of the city guard. The streets were patrolled by the Hands of Justice, all wearing red robes and silver runic armor, all carrying swords and whips. She couldn't help noticing that they also wore the same clenched fist icon, clearly visible on their shoulders. Their expressions were so identical, so cold and hard, that she wondered if they'd been enchanted. And yet they snapped at people, seemingly at random. A young woman was told off for wearing a colorful dress. A young man was reprimanded for showing too much leg. An older woman had her necklace torn away and smashed to the ground for no reason Emily could see. She braced herself, readying a spell as the fanatics peered at her, but they moved on without comment. Clearly she was modest enough not to draw their attention. That young man would have looked modest in King Randor's court, she thought. The absurd outfits the king's young blades wore had always struck her as silly. And what was wrong with the woman's dress? She winced as they reached the crossroad at the foot of Temple Row. The entire street was sealed off. A low murmur of something ran through the crowd as they saw the piles of scorched rubble where a dozen temples had once stood. Emily felt it too, even though she'd never believed. The temples and the statues had been labors of love, pieces of art crafted by those who truly believed. Now a number of temples were gone, along with all of the statues. She didn't blame the crowd for being angry. "We saw them burning," Caleb whispered. "We just didn't know what we were seeing." Emily nodded stiffly. The anger grew, murmurs of rage running through the growing crowd, but there was also fear. If justice was truly real, should he be worshipped exclusively? She shivered at the thought, wondering just how big a shock it would be if they came face to face with a real god. And then she sensed the presence, again, as a middle-aged man floated up into the air. He carried a golden staff in one hand, holding it above his head. The presence grew stronger and stronger until the entire crowd fell silent. Some of them even fell on their knees. But not many, Emily thought. The ones who were easy to overwhelm have already fallen.
"This is the time of judgment," the man said.
His voice sounded quiet, but it echoed with overwhelming force. Emily felt the rune on her chest grow warmer, warning her of subtle magic.
"This city will become the throne of justice himself. His eyes will see all, and judge all."
There was a long, chilling pause. Emily wondered morbidly how many people had secrets they would rather stay hidden. A real god, walking the world, would be able to see those secrets easily, wherever they lurked. Everyone had something to feel guilty about, even if it was something as minor as not returning an overdue library book. And even something minor could turn into a far greater sin if the sinner never came to terms with it. "No hiding place down here," she thought.
"This city will be prepared for his assumption," the speaker continued. "You, his chosen people, will be prepared for his judgment. Us, his brave followers who maintained the spark when all was dark, We'll serve you as we cleanse you and ready you for your life in a truly just world.
Emily held Caleb's hand and listened, wondering when the speaker would get to the point. She'd known quite a few men who'd acted as though they'd fallen in love with their own voices, but the speaker seemed different. He was so consumed with his own certainty that he wanted to share it with everyone. But then, coming face to face with his God must have seemed like proof he'd been right all along. If she'd been a worshipper who'd met her God, she suspected she would have felt vindicated, too.
"This city belongs to justice, and justice alone," the speaker said.
Emily straightened. It felt as though it had taken hours, but they were finally getting to the meat of the matter.
"The worship of all other gods is now forbidden."
A rustle ran through the crowd, hastily dimmed by the presence.
"And all temples, statues, and idols are to be destroyed. Your household gods are to be smashed."
Another rustle, angrier this time.
"And your holy books burnt."
Bastards, Emily thought. She couldn't help a hot flicker of anger. Burning books was the closest thing to blasphemy she knew, even though the local religions hadn't been too keen on the idea of printing presses. And yet letting everyone read their texts won them more converts.
"Everyone is expected to present themselves for religious instruction at sunrise and sunset," the speaker continued. "Those who do not receive instruction will be whipped. All shops are to be supervised, with prices fixed to ensure that everyone can afford to eat. Shopkeepers who attempt to evade the rules will be executed. All banks are to be closed as sources of evil."
Emily listened in numb horror as the speaker read out a long list of rules. The price fixing alone would lead to disaster, but it was hardly the worst. Young women were not to be on the streets unaccompanied, and not at all after dark. Young men were to present themselves for additional religious instruction before being absorbed into the fists, not hands, of justice. The priests of every other religion were to surrender themselves at once. Anyone who'd been part of the government was to report for duty by the end of the day. And anyone who disobeyed, they were told over and over again, would be whipped or executed. "They're building a theocracy," she thought. "This is not going to end well."
"No one is to leave the city," the speaker finished.
Emily's heart sank. The presence was strong enough to make teleporting dangerous. It reminded her of the haze she'd sensed at Farrakhan.
"All will serve justice."
The fists of justice stamped their feet, brandishing their swords.
"Justice! Justice!"
the crowd muttered angrily. Emily glanced at Caleb, then at Sienna. If the crowd rioted, with so many armed men watching them, there would be a bloodbath. She didn't know what to do if all hell broke loose. Fight to help the crowd or run, knowing the riot would quickly turn into a slaughter. She sensed the presence grow stronger and looked back at the speaker. The tip of his staff glowed with an eerie white light, a flare that was somehow wrong. She couldn't look directly at it, even as he cast a spell. A portly man was yanked into the air and suspended upside down, hanging over the crowd. The speaker's face tightened with disdain as the man screamed and begged for help, denying everything. And yet it sounded as though he didn't know why he'd been targeted.
"This is a banker," the speaker said.
He couldn't have put more disdain into his voice if he tried.
"He invited credulous fools to put money in his bank, then used their gold to purchase more and more imaginary loans. He forgot the simplest principle of all. You can't spend more than you earn. And then his loans caught up with him, and his bank evaporated. We promise you justice."
There was nothing less than absolute conviction in his voice.
"And we swear to you that you will have justice."
He waved his staff. Emily sensed a sudden flow of magic, guided by something that felt oddly familiar, an instant before the banker's body glowed with blinding light. She looked away instinctively as the banker screamed in pain. There was nothing she could do. When she looked back, the body was nothing more than stone. She didn't have to look at his face to know he died in screaming agony. And he might not even have been a real banker, her thoughts reminded her. The only banker she actually knew was Marcus. Was he in danger? The Bank of Silence was heavily warded, but it was also an obvious target. They might just have scooped someone off the streets to serve as an example. She forced herself to think as the crowd recoiled, panic starting to spread. The magic felt familiar, yet she couldn't quite place it. A spell she hadn't used, but one she'd seen. Seen where? The memory seemed lost within the shadows of her mind. What was it? The speaker made a gesture. The petrified man dropped from the air and shattered into 1,000 pieces when he hit the ground. Chapter 26. For a long moment, there was absolute silence.
"Go home," the speaker said, "and spread the word of justice."
Emily glanced sharply at Sienna, who nodded. The Fists of Justice were already advancing, waving their swords and cracking their whips at anyone who didn't look as though they were moving fast enough to suit them. She took one last look at the speaker, who was lowering himself back to the ground, then hurried after Sienna as the fists moved closer. The crowd seemed too stunned to fight. They just saw someone killed in front of them, Emily thought. Her own thoughts seemed to have trouble catching up with what had happened, and they thought they sensed a real god. She glanced at the ruined temples as they walked past Temple Row. The Fists of Justice were everywhere, sifting through the rubble and ruthlessly extracting anything of religious value. Others were readying the next set of temples for destruction, carting out books and parchments, and piling them up in the center of the street, ready for burning. She felt shock and dismay run through the crowd as the pile of irreplaceable parchments caught fire. A priest in a red robe stood at the corner of the street, handing out pamphlets to everyone as they passed. His gaze flickered over Emily, then landed on Caleb. Emily tensed, expecting trouble, but he merely passed Caleb 2 copies of the pamphlets instead. Emily was torn between relief and annoyance at being so casually dismissed, simply for being female. The priests didn't seem to be handing anything to women, even women who were clearly alone. She knew she should be relieved. She didn't want to attract attention until she figured out how to beat the entity, but it was still annoying. It was the first step in dehumanizing women. She couldn't help noticing that all the priests were male. The street seemed colder somehow. She kept hold of Caleb's hand, glancing from side to side as they hurried home. The shops were closed, streets were barricaded. Emily wondered, grimly, how long it would be until the Fists of Justice knocked their way through the makeshift barriers and started to patrol the streets. They wouldn't want to allow anyone to defy their rule, not in the early days. A hint of weakness might prove disastrous. She suspected it wouldn't be long before the Fists came for Sorcerer's Row, even though most sane city councils ignored magic users as much as possible. The street might prove a haven for the disbelievers and discontented. And they have something on their side, Emily thought. If Justice drew energy from the spells hurled at him, the wards protecting the street will be an all-you-can-eat buffet. The sorcerers won't stand a chance. Hundreds of wards drifted through the air as they turned into Sorcerer's Row. Emily sensed 12 sorcerers looking at her, looking at everyone, through the wards. She shivered helplessly as the wards drifted over her skin. They felt formidable, but they might prove worse than useless against Justice. She hoped the wardcrafters had enough sense not to hook themselves directly to the wards. The feedback from one or more of them breaking would be enough to kill their creators. Sienna stopped to speak to one of the sorcerers on the barricade. Emily glanced at Caleb, then took one of the pamphlets and tested it for hidden surprises. The rune on her chest warmed as soon as she opened it, warning her of subtle magic. She tested the paper carefully, trying to find the rune. Someone had drawn the pattern out so carefully that it only formed when the pamphlet was opened. It was a very low-power rune, so subtle that it might pass unnoticed, but given time, it would have an effect on anyone close by. "Clever," she muttered. "Whoever designed this was disgustingly inventive," Caleb agreed. "That's nasty," Emily nodded. On one hand, it was reassuring. The Hands of Justice, the Fists, now, seemed to think they needed to force people to convert to their faith. They weren't confident enough to believe otherwise. But on the other hand, most of the city's population, even the strong-willed, wouldn't realize the rune existed, let alone what it did. They might not convert immediately, but their resistance would slowly wear down to a nub. Just leaving the pamphlet open in the wrong place might prove disastrous. "We can destroy the rune," she said.